You're listening to Red Nation Online.
We keep it going, Jeff. Renowitz, back in the goal, back in the lead. Captain Jeff Renowitz. Everybody felt it was Sean Maloney's. Instead, it was rolled to Big Red. It opened up the shooting lane. And this is something Jeff Renowitz.
Saturday, April 4th. JC Plunt, I'm Ian Clark, and we're live from the Football Factory as the Reds are still looking to pull it all together after a 3-2 loss to the Chicago Fire. There'll be no lamenting the referees this week as the game once again came down to poor displays at the back. We discuss some of the positives, Ashton Morgan, Jovinko's first goal, and Benoit Cheyrou, but also go over Warren Cravel's red that led to the winning goal, and at what point should we begin to get concerned with the recent results. All this and more on the next 35 minutes on East Side Stand Up.
And try to reel it in and have a, what's the word I'm looking for? Sophisticated discussion?
Yeah.
Instead of like, just like completely emotional. Because that's what we're feeling right now. And the game still, we're watching the highlights as we're discussing. We're at the Football Factory. And it's just going to get you, it's going to get us all a little bit angry. Although the Toronto goals I'm not so upset about, but.
I'm not sure I'm the person you want to have for a sophisticated discussion.
Okay, well then, I think the obvious thing, probably what people are going to start talking about, is the start that we've gotten off to. And where, what your thoughts are at 1-3, this result, you know, what you're taking from these first four games and where Toronto's sitting right now. What are you feeling about the team?
It's, well, you know me, I'm Mr. Positive, so.
That's why you're here. In case they lost, I wanted to make sure.
There's a lot, you know, a lot of different factors that go into something like this. We still haven't played at home, right? And we still have three more road games before we play at home. So that's going to factor into it. You know, we did win the first one. Now, arguably, we could have won two others. Just didn't happen. And, you know, we played well enough. We've had some issues with the referees. And then today, we've got... injuries. So injuries, international breaks, all these weird buys like in the beginning of the season, which I don't understand. It's just not contributing to getting into the flow of things, you know, the team to gel. You see moments of brilliance, though. You know, you've got players like Cheyrou and Jovinko, Altidore, you know, at that point. Even Finley, you know, has had good moments this season. And so you see what can be. And now it's just a matter of getting everyone on the team together, playing at the same time. We've only had, one game with our full squad? Basically, it was the first one, right?
Yeah.
And since then, there's been injuries or suspensions or international play, so...
Yeah. I guess the one thing to balance that out, though, JC, is that, I mean, Toronto's not unique in... Every team deals with injuries.
Yeah.
Every team deals with bad ref calls. They all go on the breaks. So I think it's just something that just needs to be weighed in. Right, when we look at the potentials, the things that can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Kansas City had started their 2000, was it a 10 or 11? I think it was the 2011 season, right? They started a whole bunch, half the season on the road while Sporting, the park was being finished. We're not the first team to have to go through the same thing with Houston, if I recall correctly. They spent a good chunk of their season waiting for the stadium to be completed. I mean, we knew this going into the year,
and
what we'd be dealing with. So as much as I agree, it's difficult. You know, it shouldn't be a surprise, and the club should be planning accordingly. Only thing I would say is I'm sort of two minds where it's like, you know what, knowing the way this league goes, a lot of teams have started the season slowly. Now, only Toronto FC has the distinct prestige of going, was it 0-9 to start the year? But we saw last year New England went on a 9-game losing streak at one point. We've seen 2012 when Toronto had that great start. In the Champions League, not a great start in the league, but LA struggled out of the gate and managed to come back. Like, teams have sort of been able to turn around. So,
I think
there is something to be said that if the quality is there in the team, as long as they don't get laxed in accepting and just saying, like, we're just going through the motions. Like, I kind of felt you saw with that 2012 Toronto FC team. I'm not that concerned. But that's, on this flip side, I mean, there's nothing good about losing three games in a row.
No, there's a couple of things. There's also the quality of the opposition that we've played. Well, minus Chicago, but the other three teams are top clubs, right? And you're playing them at home. Two of those are home openers, so that's going to factor into it. No, there's definitely, you know, there's plenty of time to turn this around. And I think that that's the difference with a team like we had under Preki, where it was all effort, right?
Yeah.
And no real skill. If things don't go your way, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
A team like this, there's skill.
Yes. One guy can pull it out.
Yeah.
In a brilliant moment.
Right. So I think that's a big difference to think about, too, is we can go on a run and just score a ton of goals. And just dominate, basically.
Sure.
Right? Which is what we tried to do today, where, you know, like, you know what, our defense is banged up, let's just go out there and go after them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talked about, you said the teams that we've played so far have been good, but, you know, I saw a lot of the chatter before this game and a lot of sort of disparaging comments against the Fire.
For sure.
And I think they're a better team than people give them credit for. And I think that some of the, I mean, we haven't seen a lot somewhere, but David Akam showed what he can do this game, and he's only played one game this year. I know a lot of people are saying Sean Maloney is shit, but I think there's a transition that every player experiences coming into the league, and he looked pretty good today. And I think this kind of game was a little bit closer to what Chicago might have to offer this season than the first three games they had, where they looked pretty crap. I think they're going to be a more competitive side than they were last year, no doubt. So And we knew going into this game, that we saw on the screen, and I put it in my match preview, that Toronto hasn't beaten Chicago since 2010. Last year, the only thing that, the one thing I took, though, was that last year I felt both games in Chicago should have been Toronto wins. The first game when Moore got the red card, I thought that was a poor call. And I think if Toronto had 11 men the full match, they would have won. And then, of course, they started this game. I don't know why they would do, like, it's...
Agonizing the refs.
Yeah, it's almost like it's, how do I put it? It's not foreshadowing, it's not bad karma, but it's something about, like, showing that Gilberto foul, in quotes, where we should have won the game. It's just like, really? Do we have to kind of play our little violin?
Rehash that, yeah.
Play our little violin all the time? It's just like, you know what, we can go out there and win a game just as is. So, I mean, those were my thoughts going to the game, but I did think on paper, and if we kind of start from the start of this game, when you look at what our options are, I thought Toronto was the better side. And of the key players between the two teams, Toronto's key players should be better than Chicago's. And I would have said, even on the road, it should have been enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the start of the game, though, where, like, I admit a note that in the first 9 minutes, Carval had, like, four runs, like, a cam mostly, just go break. Let's blow by him on the left side.
Yeah.
And he had a yellow card. It was just atrocious. I mean, it was horrible the whole game. And then kind of on Twitter, people were saying, so what are the odds of him getting sent off? Like, probable or it's going to happen? Like, those are the only two options. and it did. And we knew in Salt Lake, we saw how bad he was.
We've seen it. Well, I don't want to say how bad. I mean, I'm almost going to say, should we start trying to re-sign Jeremy Hall? Slot him back and right back? Like, that's... This is where it kind of sits for me. I'm joking,
yeah.
But I'm saying, like, that's where I'm going with this. Is that, I mean, we haven't seen really anything so far to say that he is looking comfortable. And why you wouldn't? Why
put Jackson back there, like you said?
Jackson, yeah. And like when Mark, I mean, I know Mark Bloom is that sort of periphery NASL MLSer, but I mean that's his natural position.
And he's better than Carval.
For me, at least in terms of the fouls that we've seen, I would probably, at this point, I would give Bloom a game.
But Carval's not giving you anything going forward. I mean, he had the one decent cross today, but...
But he also had one absolutely atrocious one, right? Where he had three or four guys in the area, and he put it way over the net, out for touch, and it's just...
Yeah.
That tells you something there, that, you know...
Like, Morgan has grown, he's gotten better. I don't see that from Carval.
Well, it's going to... I mean, that's the kind of thing that will come with confidence in games, but, I mean, we haven't seen much these first four games. And then, of course, you've sort of, like, kicked off the game for us where we're talking about the early going of the match where Chicago looked really bright. And Toronto, I thought, really took a little while to get going with just poor possession, couldn't hold up the ball.
just kept passing it to the other team. It was bizarre. It's like they saw red and say, like, oh, that's us, and then kept passing it to Chicago. It was really, really bizarre.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was in the first 15 minutes when, you know, we saw this play where Jones was coming down the same side that we've seen everything happening, and, you know, no one's being able to cover. And defensively, I think that's been the talk for most of the season, right? Just defending, Toronto getting caught out. I mean, we got from the first game of the season, there's been issues with this team when teams are on the break or trying to counter that we haven't been able to match up with the pace. And I think maybe the verdict might be out that this is what you can do against Toronto FC. And we saw Jones, you know, get past Finley, just come into the area and just kind of like that straight toe poke. It wasn't quite a toe, but I mean, he didn't curl it. He just put it straight far post. And
I think Bendik should have saved that, but I think it was also very unlucky because in the build up to that, Finley was tracking back, and what he tried to do is smash it against, I guess it was a Cam, out for touch, right?
Right.
So, and it kind of bounced between his legs, and then they retained possession, and then they scored from there, because Finley's not a defender, so he was easy to get by, and Crevalle, of course, was, I don't know, picking daisies up at the top.
Yeah.
Who's nowhere to be seen anywhere near the play.
Yeah.
Yet this took some time to develop. Like, how is he not tracking back more?
Yeah. But, I mean, the one thing that maybe you can, as we roll through this first half and discuss some of the things, was that, I mean, Toronto came back almost right away.
Yeah.
You know, within 5 or 6 minutes. And Toronto started to, this is the point where, from this point on and into part of the second half, that I think you started to see a little more of what Toronto FC could be in terms of when they have possession and when they're comfortable with each other. We saw a really nice sequence, right, where Bradley, Giovinco, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, if he laid it off to Cheyrouz, knocked it over to Morgan, and Morgan laid it back for Giovinco, who, I mean, we were laughing because it was a pretty sorry goal.
Yeah, it was a weird swipe from Bush, and I'm not sure what was going on there.
I mean, there was a guy sitting here with us saying, oh, it looked like it went the wrong way. I'm like, even if he went the wrong way, the ball was still kicked right. It went right to him. I think if I had to suggest, it was probably that he was expecting a lot more on the shot. And whether he didn't get enough on it or the deflection off Larenowitz really toned down the shot. It's like the knuckleball of the off-speed pitch.
Yeah.
That really caught him off guard and he had nothing to do. But the two things I want to talk about that sequence and talk about player-wise is, you know, Morgan getting forward. And we talked about this before the game. I think Morgan is worth talking about from last week's game and this week's game, and then Giovinco scoring his first goal. But I want to start with Ashton Morgan and just thoughts about him and things that have been going on with him in his last two games. Because, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know, I'm a big backer of all players Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when people are I find that Toronto City supporters can be very critical of Canadians and very critical of their own players.
I've definitely heard people say we have too many Canadians on the team, that's why we're not performing well.
And you hear really strong criticisms of Ashton Morgan over the last years, some justified and I think some not. And I would throw a guy like Kyle Becker in the mix too, where people really ragged on him. And I would say in both cases, I think people can be off the mark. I think in their strengths, they have a lot to offer. And if we talk about Ashton Morgan as a wing back, more so than a left back, that's when we see the best out of him. In the last two games, we started seeing some of those flashes of what we saw in 2012, where he really has something to offer going forward.
And it's, it's that, and he's also stronger. And I think
he looks stronger, doesn't he?
Yeah,
I think this year.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe seeing Donnell Henry go from, you know, a good defender with potential to a beast.
Yeah.
And just bulking up and, you know, like you said, becoming a man.
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of inspired him as well. I was like, oh, you know what? If I get a little bigger, a little stronger, I don't get bossed off the ball defensively, I still do my thing offensively, I can perform well. Like, I can be somebody. And now you have this interesting conundrum where Morgan has played so well. What happens when the center backs come back with Morrow? Like, who do you start there? I mean, there's a lot of fixtures in
the game. And we discussed this, that, you know, it doesn't have to be a sure thing. But it can be an option for Greg Vanney to consider, is that, you know, we're looking at something like a 4-3-3 right now, but it's like, why not try a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 with the variations where you have two fullback wingbacks and you have maybe center back of, when people are healthy, you could have Morrow on the left, Perkey in the middle, and Hagman on the right. right? And then you have Morgan out at the far side, and whether it's Bloom Jackson. Or it's Jackson on the right side, or even maybe Cravall, if you eliminate some of his defensive duties, possibly that can work. And when you have the two defensive midfielders of Giroud and Bradley, who knows? Given circumstances, that might be something to consider, because you know Morgan, I think he has something to offer under the right circumstances. So, and I think that's what we saw. I mean, I was happy to see him put in a decent game again, and the layoff to Jovinko, which what we said there was, even though it wasn't a fantastic goal, I'm just happy he got on. He got a goal.
He got the goal. The build up to that was great. I saw somebody mention there was 17 passes leading up to that.
Really?
Listened to him out. Yeah. So it was a great build up, and that's the kind of thing you want, right?
Yeah.
You're retaining possession, you're making good decisions, and the ball to Morgan was beautiful.
Right.
You know, they're not all short little passes. There's some creativity there, and I think when you see that is when you go, okay, this team has skill, this team has potential, this team can do great things, and it's in those moments where that skill, and you know, something we mentioned to Haglund, you know, it seems like his passes were connecting more. And I was going to make the point that in past years, they were always going up the middle. And of course, like, and that would just fail. But Haglund, at least 4 or 5 times, he went right in the middle. I was like, no, what are you doing? But he connected with his man. And maybe the first touch kind of failed. But in some cases, like, it was great.
Yeah.
And at least the balls are reaching the right players in those, from certain players, right?
Yeah.
Haglund being one of them. Where, well, that's a positive.
Yeah.
And if you get, you know, with DK in there, maybe we can hold it up a little better because Finley was terrible today. Maybe that's a different result, right? And Altidore usually is pretty good. Osorio, I thought, was absent today for the most part, except for that terrible miss at the end of the first half.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, the first half we come away at 1-1, and I think as the half went on, you know, Toronto was growing. They were looking better, and the one thing I would say, another encouraging thing is, they came out in the second half, I thought, looking really good. And we saw a lot of the passing and a lot of the connections carrying over from the first half. And they looked quite confident. And when you look at the go-ahead goal that Toronto had, I mean, it was just, like you said, it's all technique and it's all skill. And it gives you a little bit of glimmer of like, okay, like sometimes these guys can just in one sequence pull out something incredible. And you see Giroud, who's already done this more than once this season, do a perfect lift over to, he did that in the first game of the year against Vancouver, over to Jovinko. I mean, he passed it through two guys, I think. And then, two guys were closing down on him, and then there was the player sliding through, and Giroud just, cool as a cucumber, man, just placed it where it needed to go. No big deal.
Yeah.
No big deal, man.
No.
And we're up 2-1, and you're like, shit, like this is, you know, we're on track to what we got to do.
Yeah, that was just a beautiful, beautiful goal, and that's kind of what you sign those players to potentially do. I think Giroud is better than I thought he would be. I thought he'd be like a good, solid, maybe like off the bench as a kind of backup or you know, like a depth kind of player. Like, I didn't realize like how much better he was.
Yeah, I think some of the indicators, I think, when I look at guys coming from overseas, because you know sometimes you just say, oh, he's played in La Liga or he's played in Bundesliga or he's played in England, but you also, you know, need to factor in, you know, the team that he's on, the amount of games that he's played. Like, just the mere fact that he's been in a country doesn't necessarily mean he's gonna, like, we look at Mista, for all the quality he had, I mean, he hadn't scored a goal on any frequency in 6 years before he came here. And there's lots of players like that come over to MLS where people think, oh, like, this guy, he's going to light it up because he used to be great. But, I mean, Giroud came here as a week-in, week-out player from Marseille.
Right.
A top Ligue 1 team.
Yeah.
So I would have been really surprised if he wasn't able just to walk into the league and look solid. And I think he has so far.
Absolutely.
However, as much as we're celebrating and getting excited for us going ahead, and Greg Vanney talked to us after how poor it was that, you know, we go up 2-1 in another team stadium. You know, you have to expect that when you put someone to the corner, they're going to fight their way out of it.
Punch them in the face.
And that's exactly what Chicago did. And they did some of the things that Toronto is so poor at, which is defending crosses and closing down play in the 18-yard box. I mean, we saw again, like, the chatter before the game was, Sean Maloney, like, he's been garbage. What a poor signing. Yeah, well, he scored on us, man. Like, he.
Yeah, but that's a terrible goal. I mean,
it was a poor goal, but
Grimace has to make a better attempt to save that. Called Grimace because he was dressed in purple today.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, Bendik, I mean, you know, I'm no fan of Bendik. Railed against him the whole game. I think Alex Bono should be starting.
Off the hop, yay?
Oh yeah, just give it to him. You know, he's the next great American keeper. Why not use him until he decides to play overseas, right?
Well, we'll touch on that in a second when we get to the next one. But I did want to say, you know, in that sequence, I'd be more inclined, and I'm only just saying, I mean, I thought Haglund has played pretty okay this season.
Yeah.
And I thought he had a decent game, but that's a play where I'm like, man, you can't give that guy so much space in the 18-yard box. I would be surprised if a guy, like, having a little sort of recon on your opponent and saying, like, is Sean Maloney going to flop in the box? Or will David Akam flop in the box? I'd lean more towards Akam than Maloney. So, you know, why are you giving him that room?
Right.
That's what I would say. And I would say to Bendik, I would maybe give Bendik a little bit of a break that, I mean, he had two guys, right? I mean, it was the distance was close. He had two guys in front of him.
I know, but the cat, like, pounce, like, on a ball of yarn. Attempt at a save was...
Yeah, it was close to him. I won't disagree, but I'll give him the slight but.
Sure.
I won't do that on the next play. And, you know, we get through not much longer as we keep rolling through the second half, and this is where it kind of all... I mean, this is where the big discussion of where this team stands and what kind of has gone on. And of course, the 66th minute is where you see Carvalho just... sloppy, man.
Thinking,
like. Just sloppy. And now the one thing I would say is in this game, in that card, I mean, you can't complain about that red card.
No.
You can't complain about this loss. I mean, this was a legitimate 3-2 loss. I mean, you can't turn around and say, like we did against Columbus, saying, fuck, if that red card, the game might have looked a little bit different.
Right.
You know, Real Salt Lake, that brutal call against Nick Haglund, the game would have had a different face. I thought the main ref did a pretty good job.
Oh, except for the shiver to the head of Finley in the box.
Yeah, we saw that one.
That should have been called. But I said it before, and I say it again, the thing I hate the most in football is a fat fucking referee. And if anyone has seen me, you know I know fat. And this guy was a chubby bastard. He clearly ate all the pies. He can't get up and down the pitch, so he's not seeing all these plays. You saw him when he came to give Carvalho his second yellow. He's like just flop sweat. He's like wiping off his forehead because he can't get there in time. And some of the calls his linesmen are making, and then just relying on them.
Sure.
But like, no, stop it. Either go on a diet or quit.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot. I hate that so much.
Yeah. But the one thing I'll say out of that red card is the silver lining will be next game we're gonna see a different right back.
And of course, and just because it's Toronto FC and we're lucky that way, they're gonna rescind it somehow to make
up for
the Moro one.
I don't think that's gonna happen. But I think the two parts of that is A, not only did he get a red card, but that red card from Carvalho led to the game-winning goal. There's two parts to that play. Because what we saw is Lorenowitz steps up, and I feel like I've lamented about free kicks before, but it might not have been Bendik, so I'll hold off on that. But, I mean, A, you have to set up your wall, and B, you have to trust your wall. And he didn't either.
And it's the keeper's responsibility to set up the wall. What, did he have, like, three men there, and they were... You can see from the angle, the camera angle behind from behind the goal, the wall's nowhere near where it should be. I'm no genius. I'm no expert. But I know that was wrong.
Right.
I don't know where it should be, but I know it's not there.
Yeah. And then you see Bendik cheating to the right.
Where the wall is.
Where the wall is, where the hole opened. Like, there was no player obstructing the channel into the far side of the goal. So... I think that was quite poor, and I think that's the next discussion or debate, because until that moment, you know, I thought Bendik had a decent game. He made some big...
He did make some good saves.
I'm looking at you're searching there. I'm seeing the look on your face. After that play, he made some big saves. The game could have got out of hand. And even in the start of the game, like, he made that nice save in the 35th minute against the Cam.
But how many of his big saves are because he's... poor positioning, or you make them look better than they really should be. And maybe a better keeper would just be there.
Well,
his save percentage is one of the worst in history.
Yeah. Well, this is what I'll say, is that as much as I'm saying this about Bendik, because, you know, when they say, oh, great shot stopper, I don't think Bendik has some kind of monopoly on shot stopping. I think that is almost the strongest goaltending characteristic of a North American keeper. So yeah, it can be found in a litany of keepers across 100%. The continent. So it's the details, I think, that you want to look for that will give you an edge in terms of distribution, or
setting,
you know,
up your defense,
or you know, big clutch game making saves, and like you said, communication, command of your area, and directing the team from the back. And those are the little things that, when I remember even Stefan Fry, for all his faults though, I do recall that, I mean, he was a strong voice at the back, and he was comfortable with the ball at his feet and getting it out there. And even Miloš Kostić at times, you know, he was loud back there when he got comfortable, as I remember.
Yeah.
And I still haven't quite seen that from Bendik, where he's been like owning that back line.
And you need a certain level of composure. What did we see after the goal? There's a ball that went back for a goal kick, and he's pushing the other players around. Like, no, you can't do that. You know, if they see you, you're getting carded for that.
Yeah.
And you have to keep your composure. You have to keep your head about you. Like, you're supposed to be the leader, and you can't get all frustrated. If you're that frustrated, like during, you know, dead ball, like what's happening when on the pitch, when things are happening around you, that's not inspiring confidence.
Well, we'll see how things, because, like, I mean, we've had seasons where it started off with this is our ideal starting 11, and as the games start rolling out, you kind of start to see opportunities for players to switch out. I think we're at a stage now where, for me, some of the question marks are most glaringly right back.
Yeah.
I think Finlay needs to step up his game.
We've got DK and Moore to can fill in.
Yes, right? But that's what I'm saying, is that if Finlay wants to, like, this was a game where it seemed like every ball that was sent for him to hold up, he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And it was getting to a point where it was like, once again, the ball comes to Finlay and it goes right back. He doesn't hold it up, it bounces off him and right to the Chicago player. And that's going to be something where...
But he's had good games this year. So
I mean, yeah, he's had moments. I won't deny that. But, I mean, a game like today where some players look very good and comfortable, where you have someone like Altidore, when he really wanted it, he made it happen. And he could hold the ball up. And Jovinko and Cheru and Bradley at times. But then you start seeing other players where you're like, come on, guys, you got to get up to this level as well. You can't sit there and watch these guys go, or when you get the moment on, you can't drop the ball.
Right.
Right? You got to be able to deliver as well. And some of the guys didn't.
Bradley was unlucky, though. Like, every shot he took went off him.
He got good service, like, coming in, and everyone went into a player. Yeah. Right down to the final thing. The other note that I had down was the 79th minute. It was hilarious, because as soon as they said it on the telecast, where Cheru comes in sliding through a player, just knocks out his legs, and I couldn't help but say to myself, like, funny. And the referee didn't even like blink. He's like, yeah, continue on. And what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we got a red card for that.
Yeah. And like you said, the commentator said the same thing, so that was a red for moral. Inconsistency is a problem with the referees. I don't think that was a red 3 weeks ago, and that wasn't a foul today, so I'm okay with that to call today. But it just, there was a bad call before, which, as we discussed, because the decision to rescind it has to be unanimous, that's never going to happen when there's a member of the referees association on the panel.
Yeah.
Who came out before the panel convened to say it was a good call. So why even have it?
Yeah.
Right? And that's just bullshit.
Yeah. Those are the things that I say, like, when I looked at today's referee, as for much as whatever your criticisms were, I was like, you know, he did let some things go that looked very... You let the game play.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't okay say... You can't say...
How much of that is because, like, he couldn't see anything because he was huffing and puffing.
But. Yeah, sure. But the cards, the goals... It's good to go through a game and say, you know, none of the goals were as a result of just garbage refereeing.
No, that's right.
Which is a nice break.
It was a result from red card, but it was a proper card. So, yeah.
So that's at least something that we can walk out of this game from. And then I think also... Trying to kind of circle back to how we started this, just saying, like, how the team is doing and how they're set up, and it's like a result like this, I think, has more legitimate things to build off of. I mean, the things that went wrong were more clearly identifiable, as were the things that went right.
And you can't point to a third party and say, oh, if that wasn't called, so now you have to look at yourself. And
now,
say,
there was a lot of garbage bags floating around the stadium. I would maybe take exception with that.
Well, that's because they're beautiful. American Beauty taught us that.
Yeah. Was that in Chicago? It probably wasn't. Was
no,
it?
No.
No. But whatever. That was maybe that was the only thing you could say was that. What was that? Hagelin had that one ball up there that literally
came back.
It would have gone to goal, and it probably went about 15 yards in total. It was, you know, it's funny. It's like, was it Chicago years ago that came to Toronto during that hail and windstorm where Nick LaBroca sent the cross in and it swung into goal?
Yeah. It was like one of the best goals ever.
there's a good memory for you. And that was against Chicago. So I guess...
that was a good one.
Comes back to bite us. But we're trying to keep this podcast fairly short, on point in terms of roughly 30 minutes, because I want to kind of finish one of the points that you started on, like where Toronto's sitting, the games they have coming up. If I'm not mistaken, the next game is FC Dallas. And then in the next ones, I can't remember the order, but it's going to be Philadelphia and Orlando. Which, you know, when you think about them, I mean, Dallas is looking really good right now. So that's going to be a very tough game. But then you also look at Philly and Orlando, who have been sort of a mixed bag.
You have to win at least two of those.
And I'm starting to think that I think that's the case. Now, you brought up the point at the start about how, you know, you have to consider the start of the year. You know, we haven't had our home games and what that can be. However, my thoughts are that, you know, if you start this season so poorly with no momentum or no encouraging signs, that home form, that home fortress isn't going to be much of one if no one's excited.
Yeah, and that's been our problem.
Right, after the home opener, and if we don't come out of the home, we're looking good, it's going to be a fizzle.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be even harder for this team to turn things around if people are saying, fuck, same old TFC, man. Here we are again. We had one win in our first 8 games, and now we have a home opener.
And our home form the last 3 years hasn't been great compared. When we were shit, we were better at home than we are now. Which is
that's a funny thing, eh?
Yeah, like we used to be a fortress. And I think, but if you can get the crowd behind you, I think that makes a difference, right? And so, yeah, but if you're coming into the first home game with a 3-4 record, that's not terrible.
No, it's not at all. I would say
so
no.
So winning 2 of the next 3 is feasible.
Yeah.
And so I think at that point you're in good shape, right? For such a brutal stretch. Then all of a sudden you got all those, you know, beautiful home games in the sun. People get excited. You got 8,000 people. That could get pretty interesting.
Yeah, but that's sort of the one, maybe sort of, how do I say it? The X factor that I'm looking at is that's what could maybe dictate these home games, is how engaged the support is for the team, as well as the casuals or, you know, the day of supporters who come in maybe one game here and there. And that's going to factor into it, because we've seen over the last couple years where support has stood in terms of how, like, really passionately feeling that what our chances are. And I think there's been a lot more skepticism and, you know, more you'll get it when you give it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's sort of the thing that's what I'm holding off of. I don't want to get too far ahead of saying, oh, you know, when we get home, things will turn around so we can go 1-7 or whatever to start the year.
Right.
Dallas is going to be tough, and I understand that. But the next 2 games, I think that however that shakes out, it might end up having to be must win.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think if you get a result in Dallas, maybe like a draw, that'd be really good.
I think that'd be huge, given how well they've been playing.
So I think we're coming together. I don't know how... like when Perky's scheduled to come back, I think that will make a big difference.
That's the 2 things, is that I think Vanny is going to have to come to terms with his, you know, his starting 11 from the beginning of the year. He might have to start determining what is the best setup. I mean, part of me is like, fuck, would it hurt to see what maybe a DK Altidore partnership looks like with Jovinko sitting in the hole?
Can anyone stop DK Altidore? they're too strong. You're not going to boss either one of those off the ball, and yeah. them together, they're going to tire out the defenses.
Yeah,
because you have to put so much effort into stopping those big bodies. I think that's an unstoppable duo, and I want to see it.
Yeah, but
I mean, DK is my favorite player, which means he's going to be terrible. Because my previous favorite players have been Kyle Becker, O'Brien White. it's not
O'Brien
a good list.
White, that's a doozy.
Yeah, I was very excited for O'Brien White.
Well, he had promise at one point. You can't deny that. Well, that's the thing is that, you know, we got to see. I'm interested to see what, you know, Vanny comes up with. Because, I mean, he's got 2 weeks to prepare for FC Dallas. That's the next big one.
Yeah, it's a good
one. And how he and who, you know, recovers in time, and how he sets up this formation. You know, you might see something like Perkey and Morrow as a center back pairing, with Morgan at left back, and then addressing who's going to be at right back, and that could make all the difference.
For sure, it's not going to be Carvalho. So at least we get to see somebody else, and maybe it is Jackson. You said he's played there before.
Yeah, well, he sort of split time, I think, at Dallas, and towards the end of his time at Dallas, I think he might have been playing right back if I remember correctly. You know, that's kind of what. I would probably suspect that from what we've been seeing so far in terms of like him already getting a little bit of time at right back. So we'll see what happens in these next couple of games. I mean, I'm of the mind that I'm not panicked yet. And knowing how an MLS season can roll, I mean, you can turn things around in August.
Absolutely.
Right? And make a run. And we've seen it before. It just comes, but that also pairs with the character of the players on the field, the coaching staff, etc. And those are question marks. So as I balance that out, I do think as the last few games come together, before we get home, I think Philadelphia and Orlando will probably need to be looked at as wins, not draws.
Yeah.
That's my thought. And then as we look, because when we get home, the Gold Cup looms, yeah. and we'll lose the American players again. So that's where I sit with that, JC. And as we sit with this, I mean, we're closing in on 40 minutes. And I think that's perfect for the commute to work, for a leisurely Sunday coffee, whatever people are doing. And they can weigh in on their thoughts on the game. But I think we're going to leave it at that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And you got to get off to the Raptors game. So hopefully they keep it together.
Well, they're already in the playoffs, so it's all good. Toronto team winning. How exciting would that be?
I don't know. We didn't see it yet today. But people can get you on Twitter, obviously.
Yeah, at @JC_plant with an E.
And you can catch me at @ClarkRNO. You can email me at haveyoursay or info@rednationonline.ca. And send us notes about anything. This podcast is open. I know it's I'm not the best on Twitter, but if you ping me, I'll get back and we can discuss certain things, whether it's thoughts about Craval, thoughts about Bendik, or thoughts about Finley and where this team can maybe change things up to kind of just tweak this side to be a little more clinical and a little more solid on the back four. So on that note, I guess we'll leave it. Toronto loses 3-2 to Chicago, but
disappointing. I don't
know. Yeah, it's disappointing, but I'm not, you don't look at this game and just like go, oh, lamenting about something. I think, like I said earlier, there's things to take away that clearly can be improved upon, that can be addressed, and things that if they keep doing, you think that okay, this will work out. So I just hope, my concern just is that going into Dallas that it's just not taken care of properly, but I know we'll wait and see till that game comes together. So
2 weeks to prepare, this yeah, hopefully make a difference.
So we'll leave it at that. Thanks JC,
thanks for having
coming
me
out. Cheers. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys in 2 weeks time.
Eastside Stand Up is the only Toronto FC podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter @RedNationOnline or via email at info@RedNationOnline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agree, disagree, it doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, The Footy Roundup, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.